I'll be speaking just very briefly about the Council of Churches and handing over to my colleague, who is the Reverend Somabili Vava, who is a Methodist minister and is an appointee from the chairman of the South African Council of Churches Church Leaders Forum. So he's representing Bishop Ivan Abrams, basically, here in that capacity. And in that capacity, we will be speaking to the document that is before you. So certainly, we would like to warmly express our gratitude on behalf of Professor Maluleke and thank you, sir, for the invitation to make an input, a comment on this, which we believe is a very important piece of legislation. South African Council of Churches, members and chair, is a facilitating body, a fellowship of 26 Christian churches and associated parachurch organizations. It was founded in 1968 and includes amongst its members Pentecostal, Catholic, African Independent, and Orthodox churches, with a combined constituency of roughly 15 to 16 million members. The South African Council of Churches is committed to expressing jointly through its proclamation and programs united witness of these churches on matters of national debate and national interest. And so we welcome the request by you, sir, to make this submission or this comment before Parliament. I think we need to point out, first of all, that we are not experts in organizational safety or safety organization at events, but it is important enough that the presiding bishop and the president regarded the safety of the members of this nation, all members of the nation, at particularly sports and recreational events where churches may or may not necessarily be overtly represented, but certainly the presence and concern with safety and protection and where areas of danger may be due, we thought it's important to have our voices heard and to express our support for this proposed piece of legislation, a very important piece of legislation. As we look at it, to not only promote the safety and protection of our people at sports events and at recreation events, but also to ultimately build a culture of protection and safety within the legislation and beyond. So I would like to hand over to my colleague, Reverend Vava, to speak to the submission that is before you. As a sense of our common mind of the understanding of the churches on this particular piece of legislation.
Thank you, Chairperson, sir. I think for the first time, I'm back again as a civilian. So I will be addressing this committee. But I want to take note, and it must be taken very seriously by the members in this parliament. South Africa is a secular state. I'm bringing here a Christian perspective. And I would love in the future you bring in the Muslim Judicial Council, which does not incorporate into the SACC, as well as the Jewish board. So whatever I'll be presenting here, it is only from one religion. As you know, South Africa is diverse in terms of religions. I just wanted to make that comment before we can start, so that we can be in the same platform.
Before you start, Reverend, both of us and the chair, you see, when you're here in Parliament, you don't belong to the African National Congress. If you don't belong to the African National Congress, you don't know the African National Congress. What are the wings that compose and its alliance? You think that Communist Party is just something that is an albatross on the neck of the ANC. But I think your first point of departure is absolutely welcomed by both of us. It has never been our intention as a committee not to include anybody. We wanted to include the public as possible as we can. Really, I want to tell you that and promise you that myself and the co-chair would make sure that the Muslim community, the judicial community, and the Jewish board are informed so that at least they must not say Parliament has continued again recognizing a particular body at our expense. We will, we promise you, we will invite them so that we could hear what their views are. But thanks very much for that. It has been something that we were really taking notice of, but it was not a deliberate action from both of us as the chair and the entire committee. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'll start with 4.1. The broad statement of the churches is that human safety and security, insofar as it pertains to people at sports and recreational events, is the concern and responsibility of all, from government to the public to the ordinary citizen. The catastrophe at Ellis Park in 2001 was an event that will remain with the nation for a long time, and for those relatives, friends, and families caught up in that disaster, those memories will last for a lifetime. In the spirit of Ubuntu, Kimuthu Kibathu, humility and gratitude, therefore, the South African Council of Churches welcomes this opportunity to comment on this bill and thank the chair of the Portfolio Committee for the invitation to do so. After the disaster in Ellis Park, and in the light of the recommendations made by Judge Ngothe's Commission of Inquiry, we believe that this stand-alone piece of legislation is the right thing to do for the nation. It is the right because the legacy of the death of these friends coming from disadvantaged community will be a contribution to every sporting event that will take place within the South African soil and in the endless future. Of course, the churches of the SACC are unanimous in such support, since we also hope it will add to the desirable effect of hosting a successful World Cup in 2010. Moreover, we desire that the true ethos of this piece of legislation will be to create a culture of care for the safety of sport spectators now and in the future. This ethos begins, however, with our saying that never again must South Africans suffer the trauma and the tragedy of an Ellis Park 2001. In order to beget the assurance of the nation's safety, care, and protection at any sports or recreation event. In the aftermath of that disaster, however, legislation that seeks to promote such safety and protection of all who attend a recreational or sports event becomes of itself a humble yet timely legacy. We want to believe that this legacy will become evident in this bill as and when the need for our venues becomes designed with appropriate safety features, and when legally enforceable sport event management principles are recognized and upheld. The SACC, therefore, endorses further objects of the bill that seek to address, among others, the protection of the rights of persons who attend sports and recreation events, because every South African individual has got the rights, ensuring the planning, management, and enforcement of safety and security at sport and recreation events is of uttermost importance. You cannot continue to allow the Holy Spirit to guide you. To sustain it, you need somebody to plan and execute the plan. That's what in the military we call it. Any plan has got stages, phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four, where there is a debrief after any event. Ensuring that controlling bodies of all sports and recreation events, event organizers and stadium and venue owners have proper measures in place, not only just to get remuneration out of the stadiums. The care of the people is of uttermost importance. Sometimes we neglect, and those who suffer most are the poorest of the poor because they cannot be in the VIP suits. Promoting spectator-friendly secure sports and recreational events and safeguard the interests of the Republic as a desirable destination for the hosting of major international sports and recreational events. The SACC, despite acknowledging that our prior area of expertise does not lie in sport and event, and I'm sure that's why they've called an ex-soldier to be to come and also help them with the presentation. It's unanimous in our support for legislation that especially seeks the promotion of safety and protection of the physical well-being of persons attending sports and recreational events, and notwithstanding the aforementioned, the SEC provides the following three areas of comment in order to strengthen the impact of the bill. Firstly, the need to ensure that these principles of legislation are enshrined as prerequisite for safety within the building regulation of sporting facilities and venues. The needs of people with disability, whose safety may be double jeopardized by virtue. I think I'm looking for an appropriate word because I think the word disability is no longer being used. But I hope within this house will be held. Yes. Okay. Be given due priority, as well as broad promotion of a culture of attitudes and behaviors that enhance a common desire for the safety and protection of the one for the other. And I think that's where the moral regeneration concept comes in. Because if you do not have values, you end up pushing each other as you get into the stadium. If you do not have values, you'll end up selling tickets, even if you see that the stadium is full. Comments for the bill's further consideration. The design and structure of a specific sports venue or facility holds the key to the safety features that may or may not be prevalent then. South Africa has now enjoyed several opportunities to host international gatherings, of all which have been lauded globally. The WSFD in Durban in 2001, for example, has produced a blueprint of event security that is now the model for the United Nations. Prior to that, the hosting of the Rugby World Cup in 1995 and the ICC Cricket World Cup in 2003, as well as this year's hosting of the Confederation Cup, is proof that South Africa has amassed skill and knowledge from the best national and international role players to ensure significant spectator safety results at sports events. Despite the fact that South Africa's national building regulations contain comprehensive details for safety standards and fire and emergency evacuation, we are now cognizant of the facts revealed by the Water Commission of Enquiry that led to and compounded the tragedy of Ellis Park 2001. In order to strike a new sense of consciousness about safety and security into the minds and lives of the nation, therefore, the Department of Safety and Security, as well as Sport and Recreation, have crafted the safety at sport and recreational events. It is clear that there is no need to reinvent the wheel of related legislation, but merely we call for an emphasis on the tightening of related regulations. Regulations related, for instance, for tendering for construction and certification of the safety features of these venues and facilities to the provisions of this bill, building on the strength of past major event management rather than ignoring or downplaying them. We add two further comments in order to strengthen the path and the role of the bill for the ordinary citizen as a participant or a spectator at a local sports or recreational event. The safety and protection of the most vulnerable, especially children and people with disability, are the nation's faith community's most common centers of care. The level of a nation's ethic of care is discernible not only in its ability to protect spectators at a major international event, but more significantly to ensure its prevalence at the ordinary, everyday local event. The extent to which the care and protection of the child and the person with disability is upheld or is denied, whether or not adequate and really protection is available to the ordinary citizen. Such protection is more than the provision of safety and access enabling features at a venue. The spillover of unruly, boisterous elements evident in major overseas sporting events is something that must be curtailed in local matches at all costs. That is not to say that the enthusiasm and jubilance associated with sport and recreation must be kept. Unruly adult behavior, such as the witness recently, among others, the match between Kaizer Chiefs and Ajax in Newlands, together with the use of foul language, prevents many parents from enabling parents allowing their children and families to enjoy their right to sport and recreation events in public. Furthermore, the abuse of alcohol, liquor, and drugs at these public events is a concern for those who wish to assist families and people with disability. In fact, all South Africans to enjoy their rights as spectators or participants in the sport of recreation of their choice. We could legislate for access to advanced visual technology that spies on the spectator, thereby leading to a severe sanction on abusive and unacceptable behavior. On the other hand, the best form of safety and protection is mutually enforcement through a public that is aware of and educated on their rights and responsibility towards their fellow spectators and citizens. The recognition of the right to enjoyment of participation or spectatorship at any sport will take precedence over one's partial support of one team or another. In brief, we should look out for others' safety even if we are on opposing sides of teams that engage one another. Therefore, when it comes to a matter of one's safety and protection in a sport or recreation venue, everyone is responsible for the well-being and safety of the other. This should be especially so with regard to the care and protection of the vulnerable, such as children and people with disability. The question we must answer is, how do we transfer our enthusiasm and success at major event management through to our events at a local level? While the bill is essential, a Section 75 piece of legislation, it fits the roles of national assembly competency. The findings of the Ngwape Commission need to filter through to the local level, even to the Bundus in Bizana, in Daung, because that's where the people are. For this to happen, much needs to be done to create an overall awareness and education of the kind of care and protection envisaged for safety, security, and protection at a local stadium. The churches are of the opinion that for greater awareness, understanding, and education on the principles of safety and protection, this bill should be discussed more fully at provincially, at local level, even in our own gatherings as church people, even in the circumcision schools. Furthermore, we commend the Department of Sport and Recreation for working together with the Department of Safety and Security into bringing this legislation into effect. We humbly suggest that serious consideration also be given to bringing the Department of Education, basic and tertiary, on board. We believe that ongoing education with regard to the various aspects, including implementation of safety and security, should be inculcated at an early age, at the preschool, and through life. The bill will provide for content for a curriculum of lesson for students and the broader population, especially for those who might seek careers in event organization, building, or event safety management. In this way, the bill will not only be a cultural and ideological tool, but also a practical instrument for integrating those from school skilled in these areas into South Africa's economy and labor market. In conclusion, the SACC commends the Department of Sport and Recreation as well as Safety and Security in the wake of the Ngwape Commission of Enquiry report for providing legislation that seeks to promote a culture of safety and security at sport and recreation events organized at the local level. This is timely in that while not aimed specifically at the World Cup 2010, it is a useful attempt at developing the kind of culture of care, safety, and protection that South Africans will expect to impact at a major international event. Hooliganism, unruliness, unacceptable attitudes, and misbehavior, the kind of behavior which we witness through the media at international spectator sports abroad, should not be allowed to frustrate South Africa's attempt at the promotion of appropriate safety and security nationally. The SACC hereby extends its deepest gratitude and appreciation to the department for the invitation to comment and for the vision to create this significant piece of legislation. And also, sir, let me apologize for some mistakes. As a former editor, I've picked up some few grammatical errors. In future, when we make presentation, I will go through the papers of the SACC that I represent.
Thank you very much, Nkundi. The content was well heard by Kombeni. The question of the grammar is a reflection of the Council of Churches, which you want to guard against. But we people who presented that to us, we definitely have heard you loud and clear. Comrades and members, there is input from the Council of Churches. Honestly, Ompumze were still very young when the South African Council of Churches were there. And my first detention in 1976, the first check that I got, I didn't even know that you got to check it. You deposit it and you wait for 7 days to get it. When Reverend Sele, during the detainees parents committee, gave me a check from my parents, I went to the bank. I wanted that money now because I didn't know. They said, no, you have to wait for seven. Yes. So, you don't know London, you only checking at the SSE. But you must send the gratitude to Reverend Sele. When I was in that prison in Vereeniging, he was a constant visitor to me in that prison. When we were in Kroonstad, he was a constant visitor there. So I had the greatest respect for Reverend Sele. So I will tell you what was it. I was not in the 26, I was in the 27. But again, Reverend, these members, with the greatest admiration and fascination in the progressive work that is done by the South African Council of Churches, we always say to you, Nangomso, you must do this good job. The issues of transformation have not changed. This country can quickly go back to Burundi and Uganda and any other country purely on basis of race that is prevalent in this country. So you must stay put there and as your children, both black and white, guide us, put some spiritual values in our hearts and enrich our hearts because the healing process in yourself, you know, it is difficult for change. It's a big thing. To us, the expectation of change is big, especially those who have carried the blame in this country. We say it is very slow. The church says it is slow for the good cause. I still have to engage with the church because to us, they're saying it is slowly for the good cause. I want to know for the good cause, how is it slowly for us for the good cause? But the lecturers of the church that I have come across, or Reverend Sen, and say, Butana, don't hurry. As soon as we hurry, we are likely to make mistakes. But we have been there from 76 up until today. When you look outside, South Africa has not changed. You only see houses that is the change. The fundamental integration, Reverend, that ourselves, when we were in the Delmas trial there, you were saying it will change. It does not change. We must not fool ourselves. It does not change. The two societies still remain. The two human race still remain. And I would come to the gathering of the SACC and appreciate the check that you've given to me and still engage with you. But I don't feel South Africa, it has changed. It has two pulling powers. Those who pull it to the other side and we are pulling it on the other side. And then we have not come to a situation where we should come together and make the South Africa that all of us strived for. If you have not strived for a South Africa that is united, you will pull it the other side. But if you are me, you strive for the South Africa that is united, enshrined on the basic foundation of ourselves, of a non-racial South Africa, a non-sexist, and a democratic South Africa. And you sing about it. You have not had a pain of it. you'll not understand why do I say it is completely not doing very well. It is extremely slow. And he has been noble. Mr. Hammer a little bit faster than what our expectation is. So I'm very passionate about the FSC. I like what he has been doing. By the way, some of you went to jail with us in Kruestad just because you're saying it is not correct or reverent in the president's office. Chikan, in a passionate way, Chikan spoke to us and said, when God is on us, who is against us? And the Kafpas were standing there when Reverend Chikan was burying a person that the police say you must not bury. And then we buried him. And then those memories are really touching me. I feel like I must go elsewhere because this country has still not made me to feel like a South African. I feel like I must go elsewhere. And thank you very much. So it's just that you are the group of people that I've never spoken like this, but you have touched me. But let's interact on the South African Council of Churches input. I will invite all members. Let's interact on it. Cora and Suka.
First, you know, this input in really one, I think, not that he doesn't support the bill. But I want to ask you, there are these big churches events which happens over Easter weekend, please. These are the memorial and what have you. You have numbers of people going there. And what role can this bill play there in such events? There are also these gospel concerts, big ones, which take place. How do you see this bill play a role in those events? Thank you.
Suka?
In terms of what you started raised, especially the first one, I was going to ask the same question. You see, I'm widely also covered by their statements, clause 4.3, the first line in clause 4.4, because once to me they say they support the bill, they are unanimous on it. It means there's an endorsement. What is needed maybe is the bill to be friendly in its language for the implementation, especially when it comes to these big events, big churches, special times, and so on. The last one, Chairperson, I also understand they want to keep with time in terms of the technology, the disabilities, persons with disabilities. We ask to observe in the paragraph 5.3 the question of consultation, because despite that it's a section 75. But they are saying we should know that there are three spheres of government to work in cooperation with one another. So to me, they are just ready as messengers of God to obey, like in Jeremiah 5. They should observe the present government when it comes with its laws to govern the land. Thank you, Chair.
Cindy? You want to ask the question? Huh? Okay. Mfundi, you can respond on the questions that there is.
Chair, thank you for the opportunity. And briefly, in the terms of the first question, Honourable Sir, what role can the churches play in large gatherings? Gospel concerts and the huge gatherings that are organized. I think part of our response that has called for a popularization, one, of the bill and a more friendly use of the bill is precisely because of that. And we want to acknowledge this opportunity as part of the constitutional process of lawmaking in this country, that we as the Council of Churches, have used the opportunity to engage Parliament to make these submissions. So we are grateful for this opportunity, and I think it provides for also our comments on the Section 73 part of the bill, that we would want to see a more popularized process is precisely to take care of that kind of event. And my colleague here said is that even down to the designers, right down to the grassroots, there's a need for, I think it's more than just legislation that we're putting in place here, but it's building a culture of care, protection, and safety. And this is long-term. It's not just about the enforcement of a piece of legislation that's going to emerge, but to create a culture, as I understand it, in the light of the Ngwepe Commission. So I think the one way in which the churches can be assisted to put this culture in place, this legislation, which is not just law, but I understand you wanting to build a culture through the lawmaking process, is to engage faith communities, let me say more than just churches, but I think faith communities by and large. Some organize very large pilgrimages, for argument's sake, whether they organize gospel concerts or whether they organize local events like very popular big walks or whatever recreational events. I think this just becomes important that they know the essence of this piece of legislation, that there is a process that could be taken further than just the lawmaking process to engage the understanding of the populace, and particularly in the faith communities, my colleague mentioned earlier, to understand the content. But I think it's not just understanding the content, and my colleague made it very clear, is there a possibility of engaging the Department of Education? Is there a large opportunity for using the content of this bill in terms of a curriculum for sports and a recreation event management, which is becoming an industry in itself, which becomes and you were speaking rightly about the two South Africas. I only notice one side of South Africa using these kind of skills in organizing these big events, and certainly it should be able to be made available to both South Africas. There's opportunity here now for engaging the labor market and engaging the skills market with a piece of legislation through the Department of Education. So I think those two areas, in terms of education, broader public understanding, the participation with this bill, but also utilizing its ability to generate a common culture for the kind of nation we want to see that you spoke so passionately about, Chair. This one nation that you don't see yet, and I agree with you. The use of this legislation could well be one of those avenues that could speed up the kind of visibility of a nation that cares across the lines. And what better to do it very often than in the area of sport, the areas of recreation, which don't know barriers of colour and culture at the end of the day.
And just to add from what my brother said, this bill, I would love to see it to be taken even to Sikoto, because there's a lot of people who gather at Mangonde's place. Even the former minister, Steve Chweke, he once visited that area. And there was no safety. So this type of a bill should go down to the last person on earth. On 4.3, we support the bill. And I'm sure even other religions, because if you read the Quran, talk about care. So I will say we support the bill 100%.
Thank you, Mfundisi. thank you. I'm sure the the drafters and the experts are listening very clear. The very same thing that we raise around churches is now coming out direct from the leaders of these churches. Manuel has got a church there, which is called the called Mainline Church, whatever happens. There is another one called Kirisano, and all that is another part. That church in the Free State, it can fill Charles Mufedi Stadium. Got the blue red type of clothing. It can fill Putachava Stadium, 90,000 people converge there. But when the bishop of that church calls a church of that nation, he doesn't know that he must call ambulance. He doesn't know that there should be water. He doesn't know that there are other people who are diabetic there, that he keeps the church from 9 o'clock up until late at 3 o'clock, and then there are no proper contingencies that are there. Even the one of Mangonde is exactly the same. Now, what the churches are saying, this bill is good. The church say it has come at any better time, but we must do more in making sure that we consult and deal with these people so that they must understand that government's responsibility as a caring government has now reached having far-reaching implications. But the church raises very important thing that we have to go and discuss after this. The church says the organizers of the events do not carry any responsibility. They just organize those events. But the organizer, there is an emergency. The gentleman next to the reverend says there is an emergency now of a very interesting thing of these people who are called event organizers. But those event organizers are not the owners of those. If they say, for instance, the main organizer of the rugby game, how it organizes, rugby just come there and then the game is marketed and everything and the rugby comes and play there and then if there's chaos, the Mega Pro, there's a company called Mega Pro. It's organizing events for both the PSL and the South African Football Association and when they go anywhere. Those events are organized by those people. Those events are popularized by those people. Everything is done by those people. But the bill, you are right, Reverend, the bill talks about those federations that are participating in those events as if the event has been organized by them. So they're saying we must be mindful of that in making sure that even the organizers of those events must have a role to play in making sure that they enhancing the safety of our people. It cannot just be. So if Parliament goes to Mkanduri, there are people who organize those events. There are people who are putting the marquee and everything and all those other things. And the Parliament goes there and the marquee fails. Cannot be responsibility of Parliament. Parliament has not gone to that nitty-gritty in organizing that and check all the standards that have been met around safety and everything, and water is there, and the toilets and everything is there. There are other people that are doing those things behind the scenes. How do we make sure that we instruct through the bill that those people have to carry that responsibility rather than they must be out of that responsibility and the people who carry the plan are these people that the event at the Ellis Park was organized by people that could have immediately calculated that here there is going to be chaos. Number of people that are still outside is too much, and as soon as everybody hears that the game has started, those who are outside will have to force to walk to come in. And the organizer of the event, there is a way that that matter has to be done. I think it's absolutely right, Reverend, the points that you are raising are issues that we want to hear as you are discussing. But the colleague has also have another input to put to you so that you can check what is there.
Father, thank you. I also wanted to check from our local advisors, because I think the church is raising the issue of people with disabilities, if the bill is taking care of that in any way. Thank you.
Gideon, I want you to respond to people on this matter. As the church says on page, I don't know what is that page, but it's just below 0.5, above 0.5. I think it's 0.4. It's 0.451, 0.452, 0.453. The churches say they need to ensure that these principles of legislation are enshrined as a prerequisite for the safety within the building regulation for sporting facilities and venues. And the other question is the one that is asked by my colleague. Now, the other one is a broad promotion of culture and attitudes and behavior that enhance a common desire for a safety and protection of one of the other, mainly the spirit of Ubuntu, be intentionally calculated. Do you have an intention as a department to go on a very vigorous public education around the spectator requirements, behavior, and all those other things? But again, this question that is raising, number one, it's a question that up until today is going on. When the FIFA 2010 unit was here 2 days ago, 3 days ago, they said, we have realized that we don't have enough space for people on the wheelchair. That is what they said. But the stadium is complete. And now the demand of those people who are on the wheelchair in buying the tickets has now exposed them, because they've seen that the space for people with the wheelchair is very little. Now, what the concern of the churches is, you see, there is no compliance, there is not even a consciousness when these things are built, because there's nothing that compels these people to comply, even at a level where construction is taking place. It becomes by the way thing. Now, you're saying it cannot be by the way thing. It must be something that consciously people would have to take into consideration and say, we cannot come here after we have a confederation, and then we have realized during the confederation that there were problems, and therefore we are trying to make shift for people with disability also to be accommodated on that. What is this that is needed from us to make sure that this compliance around the building regulations is done? And what do you say about the comment of the churches there? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, with regard to the query pertaining to the building regulations, in terms of our proposed draft bill, when a stadium or venue owner plans a new stadium, he needs to comply with the following requirements. One is, for instance, he or she must comply with all applicable building legislation and local authority bylaws and guidelines, and also applicable building design guidelines of the SABS. I think to a great extent that will actually alleviate your fears in this regard, whereas the current situation is of some sorts that, you know, there's no control. You can clearly see in our proposed legislation, you have controlled measures that need to be adhered to. It would be also to your advantage to know that we have actually improved the definition of, for instance, of an event. Event, we now would say, means a sporting, entertainment, recreational, religious, cultural, organizational, or similar activities hosted at a stadium, venue, or along a route within their respective precincts, where at least 2,000 people or persons are in attendance. Just so you can clearly see, that clearly also answers, to my mind, the fact that, you know, this Maria over the weekend type of church gatherings is actually addressed in that it will be deemed as an event in terms of the particular act or legislation to be in place. So, and we're also saying, with regard to the building of a culture, we're saying that in essence our bill makes provision for responsibilities of various role players. There's a risk profiling for an event, might be a church gathering as well. The establishment of annual schedule of events to prevent stretching of public sector and security emergency resourcing. Obviously, the churches will also, if they need to comply, once they will have to comply with the bill, they will also have to submit the annual schedule of events to the National Commissioner. Then there's safety certification and grading of stadiums or venues where these events, including churches, church gatherings, will have to adhere to those safety certification as well. Again, building a culture of cooperation and safety for people, the church-going people, as well as any spectators, for instance. Then there's the integrated timeous event safety and security planning process between the relevant stakeholders for medium and high-risk events. Then there's the minimum safety and security measures for these particular medium and high-risk events. Event ticketing controls, it might not be applicable to churches, but at some stages it might be, because you might issue a ticket for a person without any payment, just for the purposes of, you know, of controlling your particular church gathering, for instance. Creation of offences, that in essence is what the bill is all about. So it clearly indicates a culture of building and resuscitating and sustaining, you know, the issues at heart, which is safety and security, even for church-going people and God-fearing people as well. So what we're saying then is, in essence, just to come back to the other question. Disability, for instance. Yes, in our bill, we have provided for disabilities to a far greater extent. It will be provided for in by way of regulations. I would like to refer to the honorable chairpersons and members to clause 21.17. It says the Minister of Police, after consultation with the Minister of Sports and Recreation, may prescribe measures necessary to control spectator and vehicle access at events. A spectator means, obviously, it can also have a bearing on a disabled person. So definitely, when you come to the regulation stage, we will address the disability issues as well. The consultation process with provinces, this is a 75 bill. It actually aims to maintain the essential standards with regard to safety and security at sports stadiums and other venues. But that is the main thrust of our business. But obviously it will impact on the provinces and the local authorities as well. Which is why within the next, I think, 2 weeks, we're going to the provinces. We're going to conduct workshops with provinces and local authorities as well, municipalities, to get their input and take on the provisions of this particular piece of legislation. So quite rightly so. And Department of Education, we have also consulted, you will see from our memorandum on the objects of the bill, they have been consulted. So therefore, you know, and school sport is also a common ground between sport and recreation department and education. So surely we would like to also to let you know exactly that school sport is actually also adequately addressed in terms of our legislation. In most cases, school sport will be low-risk events, save for instances where, because of the history between and the rivalry between two schools, and perhaps of the fighting that has taken place at one stage or the other, that such an event might be, categorized as a higher risk event. Any addition?
Mr. Richard, a question was asked regarding event organizers. We've covered that in the definition of an event organizer. So there is a definition of event organizer that covers a person who plans an event, or who is in charge of an event, who manages an event, who supervises an event, or holds event sponsorship rights. So even if a person is not organizing an event for a particular controlling body for themselves, they will be covered if they are organizing that event in the definition of event organizer. Thanks, Chair.
Gideon, I just want to complicate this for you. Why an issue of disability on access is so central, then we reduce it to a level of regulation by the time the bill has been passed and the minister regulates. In our view, although you're not really lawyers, but as soon as you place it at a level of regulation, you put it on the secondary level that the day the minister decided to put regulations, then that would be in place. Our view as committee and our view as people of this country is that the issues of disability have to be legislated and then not be regulated. And then if you put it as an instruction, legislation is an instruction, it's very instructive. But the regulation is saying, after the legislation has been enacted and then is in place, and therefore we want you to consider whether you cannot make issues of access for persons with disability to be equal to all those others. I am held back with a situation where that the matter of disability can't just be regulated. It needs to be legislated so that it is more instructive, and then it is, as soon as you legislate it, it becomes part of a constitutional directive and a requirement. What do you say about
that? Chairperson, I concur with you also wholeheartedly. I can refer you to the National Sports and Recreation Act. There are certain priority areas for our department, and one of them is volunteers as well as disabled people. So therefore, it would coincide with our primary focus, which we as a department must apply our mind to have, for instance, enshrined in this particular piece of legislation up front a part that stipulates that disabled people, instead of saying just spectator, for instance, one should differentiate between a spectator on the one end and a disabled person who is a spectator as well. So I agree with your point. I think it's important to enshrine it and to ensure that we have it up front by including a provision to that regard.
No, thank you, Gideon. Let's put the provision of disability there. You see, when we do every legislation in this country, every piece of legislation that in the country, it must be women-friendly, it must be disability-friendly. But as soon as you have a legislation that says, at the end of a legislation, when you're doing regulation, we will think about women, you will forget about women. Because it will not be this group that looks into what kind of regulations are coming from the minister when you're doing input. But when you legislate for that, it means you can't miss it because it's glaringly there on the act. So I'm happy that at least it doesn't really have a same mesh you can accommodate it. Yes, say Lord, right?
No, I'm fine with that, sir.
Yes.
We can link it, sir, just as a suggestion. We can link it to where there are requirements for that the minister may prescribe regarding certificates. We can mention it under there to say that those requirements should also include requirements regarding. I don't know if you concerned about access particularly or.
No, I'm concerned about access and safety.
Access and safety.
Yeah, access and safety. Mm-hmm. Both of them are applicable to persons with disabilities.
I'm sure it can be included.
Yes. So in an event, the stadium is burning. Everybody forgets about where persons with disability are, in what role and all. Everybody is looking at his own life to run away first. And therefore, then that issue of safety undermines them. So when we put it the way Gideon puts it, and then as and when we put there, then we also pronounce ourselves on issues of safety there, and not general issues of safety. But when you say any other thing first, people with disability has to be considered first when there could be any other type of. It means anybody is aware that we can't do any other thing because there is this kind of community that is with us here that we have to put first. You see? I think, I don't know, I'm not a drafter, but I'm just a simple person, but I think those are things that are coming across in life, and then that really demands our attention. So, Gideon, I take your view, and then the state law advisor's view also in highlighting and then in issues where there is any other disaster that's okay. What is the first point of call? Thank you. We're through with the Council of Churches. Reverend, thank you very much, Baba. And then if you're running for the flight, and then we'll release you, but we appreciate your input. Thank you very much.
We thank you, Chair, for the opportunity, and thank you for the responses that we've received.
Thank you. We'll call people from the Seoul City. You can come here because there's a PowerPoint here, and then the committee secretary will try to adjust it for you if you want to present on the PowerPoint.
Thank you.
Honourable Member, the Soul City is ready, and then you just introduce yourself, tell us who you are, where you come from, then you can put your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Agnes Shabalala, and I head the research department in Soul City. And this is my colleague, Savira Khaledin, who has the advocacy department. We'd like to share with you the research that we've done on alcohol and violence reduction that led us to embark on a campaign. Soul City was established in 1992. It's based in Johannesburg, and it's a multimedia project on health and development. It aims in increasing knowledge, shifting attitudes, and change behavior to promote health. We use popular entertainment approach, that's TV, radio, and print, and we also use a face-to-face community interaction. Soul City has a model of social change, and as you look on the outside, we are influencing socio-economic and political national environment following the pillars on healthy public policy and reorientate services. We are using mass media to influence the individual, trying to work on their knowledge, attitudes, beliefs, and risk perceptions to improve the skills, self-efficacy, to support for policy action and subjective norms, linking them to services. We also use social mobilization to try and reach the individual. We also work on encouraging the community by way of creating debates and dialogue, influencing social norms, diffusion of innovations, the community efficacy, social networks, and social cohesion. With that, we're using advocacy to encourage the community. Soul City operates within the public health system of health promotion framework as adopted in Ottawa Charter. And those five pillars are building healthy public policies, developing personal skills, creating supportive environments, promoting community action, and reorientating health services. That's the project we are working on, alcohol reduction and violence prevention campaign, as I said earlier on. I would like to share with you research that we've done in Soul City. In 2007, between July and September, the objective of that research was to try and understand the alcohol use within communities, to explore awareness, problems, and effects of alcohol abuse within communities, and to find out what communities' responses are to interventions that are reducing alcohol abuse. The process we follow when we do research is literature review. We consult with stakeholders within the field, and then we conduct target audience research. These are the findings coming out of our literature review. I wouldn't like to go one by one. I'll just cover what other experts are reporting. Matopoulos reported that violence, in particular interpersonal violence, is a major contributor to the high rates of injury mortality. And Harris and Van Niekerk in 2002 reported that substance abuse is an important risk factor with 53% of fatal and up to 73% of non-fatal interpersonal violence injuries testing positive for alcohol in urban areas of South Africa, and that was in 2001. Thompson in 2004, Lowe in 2001 also reported that given a rate of fatal injuries, we often refer to South Africa's violence as a culture of violence, accepted norm in resolving disputes, gaining acceptance in acquiring goods. Breccio and team in 2003 also found out that males were disproportionately affected by fatal violence, which was the second leading cause of death among males in 2000. The death rate in South Africa is 8 times higher globally within males, and death rate among females is 5 times greater than the global average. And men are most the perpetrators of violence against men and women and children. The target audience research was a national study done in South Africa, and we have used qualitative methods to conduct the research among men and women ages 16 up to 50. I will share with you some of the findings that were prominent in that study. Recreation came out as one. People feeling that there's really nothing for them to do except for misusing alcohol. A Gauteng urban male, I'll share some of the quotes just because it's a qualitative study. He said that it's easy or cheaper to buy booze than to go and watch a movie. Alcohol is the cheapest entertainer but dangerous. And another Northern Cape urban male said that there's nothing to do, it's dry, so it's also unemployment. Another prominent finding was that people use alcohol to relax and de-stress. They kept on mentioning stress as major. It came out through all interviews. A Western Cape African male said, a person who drinks has many problems, so they relieve their problems by drinking alcohol. And some young people said that we want to have fun and to relieve stress. We work so hard and we get worried about our assignments, if we did well or not, so that that's how we de-stress, by drinking. Another finding was that people are using alcohol to decrease their inhibitions. They feel that it helps them to become confident. As one Gauteng informal male said that, you will rock the world when you are drunk. You will feel you own the world. A Limpopo rural older male said that, some of us are shy. When I'm drunk, my benefit is I'm no longer shy to approach a girl. And a younger Limpopo rural male continued to say, when drinking alcohol, you do benefit. It helps you to deal with shyness. Once you are drunk, you are not shy. You can propose any girl that's available at the time. When you drink alcohol, you are proud of yourself. And the laughter was showing how proud he is, like, hey, ha, ha. Because you have worked for the money that you are spending. And another one said that alcohol is very nice and you become high. Another prominent finding was the impact of alcohol. Although people use alcohol for those reasons, they also share the disadvantages of alcohol misuse. A Northern Cape informal male said that alcohol has killed many people. People are being stabbed at taverns because people fight over a beer or a woman. Another one said, yes, people go to taverns and they bleed from the stabbings when they return. And if you're a girl, you may get raped or killed. Those are the dangers. Another participant said that it causes it at the spot, meaning shebeens. That is where it is high. Most people there are drunk, and some have drunken too much. They stab each other. At the bashes, some at the bars, they get raped there. At the bashes, they get raped, and at the parties, in the house parties, and they continue. That was a discussion among young, a group of young females in Northern Cape. Another prominent finding was that alcohol does impact on children. These adults admitted that their drinking is not good for the children. And parents and educators, they can become poor role models for their children sometimes. And here's a quote that says, as parents, especially we men, when you come home under the influence of liquor, most of us, we harass our wives in front of our children. It has a negative impact on the child because your child might become violent to other children or to his family when he grows up. Okay. Some of the quotations, just to emphasize what the participants were saying, another one here said that it's difficult because the teachers themselves are getting drunk at school, so they are not a good example. Some parents drink in front of their children. If the children come home, they see the parents maybe sitting with beers or whatever. That also has an effect on them because tomorrow they do the same thing. So they did associate violence with alcohol abuse. Another result was that alcohol can make one lose self-respect. They discussed about what people do and how they misbehave when they have taken a lot of alcohol. I will conclude with our research findings that alcohol abuse from the participants, they did say that it's a big problem in communities and in schools. The communities are aware of problems and effects of alcohol, including violence. Nonetheless, drinking is still a social norm. And the main reasons and benefits given for drinking include entertainment and coping strategy. There was a notable lack of community strategies to prevent alcohol abuse at the time of research. Communities were aware, there was a widespread awareness of alcohol misuse, but at that time they had no strategies to deal with alcohol abuse. I would like to end here, and Savera will take it further, and this is the research that led us to embark on the campaign.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity for us to input into the bill today. As Agnes has explained, Soul City is currently involved in a 5-year campaign of alcohol reduction and violence prevention. We've done intensive research, and what we have up here is a model that shows how interpersonal violence, what some of the risk factors are all across from the individual right through to societal. But just knowing the impact of time, I'm just going to go through it. Soul City is a health promotion organization, and we're addressing the issue of alcohol reduction by taking the strategy under the advice of the World Health Organization. Because when we look at alcohol and the link to violence, it's clear that a reduction in violence can only be achieved when we have a reduction in alcohol consumption. And our approach is not to say that everyone must stop drinking alcohol. Our approach is really to say that the environment within which people drink must be made safer, and places where children and families congregate must either be alcohol-free spaces or much safer spaces. For example, if you have a stadium right next to a school, then we would really question whether it's safe to serve alcohol in that stadium, because what about the impact on children? Okay, so that would be the motivation. It's not to say that there shouldn't be alcohol at all. So basically, the main reason, the point that we're picking up today is to reduce the availability and misuse of alcohol and to increase safe, stable, and nurturing relationships between children and their parents and caregivers. And we're trying to understand where it is in sports and recreational places where alcohol can actually contribute to higher levels of violence. Our campaign is really to say three particular things. One is to promote and accredit safe drinking places, such as shebeens, taverns, bars, hotels, as well as sporting venues and other recreational spaces, to promote and accredit alcohol-free zones, such as educational institutions, as well as, we think, within stadiums, especially around 2010, there should be some alcohol-free spaces for families and children, as well as alcohol-safe spaces. Because the way it exists right now, the entire stadium is an alcohol open zone. And if we think that only 55% of males and 30% of females actually drink, then the drinking population is getting prioritized over the non-drinking population, and children's needs are not being taken into account at all. Just to go specifically to the bill, it is in our submission already that if we look at Section 2 that is dealing specifically with safety and security, there's no explicit provision that is being made for the place that alcohol will be sold in, what the age of the person would be that is selling the alcohol, that alcohol should not be sold to minors, whether alcohol will be sold in open containers, plastic containers, glass containers, whether non-alcoholic beverages will be available, and whether it will be affordable. None of those things are explicitly mentioned in the bill. And we think, similarly to the point about disability that we heard earlier this afternoon, that these things need to be made very explicit in the bill, because that's the only way to make sure that it will be taken into account. Together with that, we think that at all sports and recreational venues, safe drinking messages should be mandatory. It should be there to remind people what it means to have drinks that will still keep you within the legal limit if you're going to drive, and what will still be within a healthy limit if you want to drink. Because unlike smoking, where you cannot drink at all, smoke at all because it's unhealthy, there are limits to drinking. But we are not informed as the South African public about how much must we drink. If you look at some of the containers at the cricket venues, for example, they're this big, and that's actually 2.2 drinks in one open container. So a person who buys one drink thinks they're only drinking one drink, but that container itself already carries almost 2.5 times above the legal limit. Again, in Section 5.7, we think that it's not explicit enough, because in terms of safety, it does not say what it is that must be done if spectators are intoxicated. It does not recommend that there is a hotline to the closest police station so that help can be called in very quickly. So we recommend that there is a plan to deal with the spectators, that there is a close relationship between the venue and the nearest police station that has to be put in place. This relationship must be built before the day of the event, and that there should be visible security monitoring of the venue, both by security companies as well as the police. And we think also that this section is not specific and detailed enough in how monitoring of the venue and monitoring of alcohol sales and intoxicated spectators will actually take place. Again, in Section 6, we think that both the high... All the definitions of risk, high, medium, and low, should explicitly talk about alcohol. abuse as a potential risk factor. And when we say alcohol abuse, we don't mean that a person has to be visibly intoxicated, because we all know that alcohol is a drug, although it is a legal drug. It has an impact on the central nervous system. So we have to assume that with some people, one drink is going to have a very serious impact, and with someone else, they could have many, many drinks, and it doesn't have an impact. So we cannot say that you have to have so much before it's going to have an impact on you. The security plan should actually assume that as soon as a person has something to drink, there is a potential risk factor. In Chapter 3, Section 17 does not include any communication with the national or provincial liquor authorities, so we think that event organizers and stadiums should actually do that. We also do not see anything explicit about controlling the areas where alcohol may or may not be sold, or the conditions under which the sale will take place. So we think that this section should have very separate sections in the Act itself, where the governance of alcohol and other illegal substances should be detailed. Under Section 23, we say that intoxicated persons should be defined as high risk in terms of creating an unsafe environment. Under Section 24, we recommend very, very strongly that the liquor authorities and police force should enforce random breath testing for all drivers leaving the venue. We make this recommendation because if we look at countries like the U.S. and Australia, where random breath testing is taken outside venues, random breath testing of every second driver. So there's a very high probability of being caught out if you have been drinking. Levels of violence were found to reduce by between 50% to 70%, and that's absolutely a high impact. So we strongly suggest that that is what is enforced and put into the bill. We also think that for all venues where alcohol is being sold, any kind of recreational event, that we should promote a designated driver and designated walker education programs. And obviously, this is something that Salt City would be happy to support, you know, all the role players in. But we are saying that if you're selling alcohol, we should also be promoting a healthy lifestyle approach and a safe lifestyle approach, which is what designated drivers and walkers are about. In Section 28, we suggest that we include we suggest that there should be increased state liability if there's poor enforcement and under-resourced management of recreational venues, because someone has to take responsibility for the safety of the spectators and the general public that will be at that event. In Chapter 4, there's a long list of offenses for which people can be held accountable, but the causal relationship between those offenses and alcohol is not made explicit, and yet it's quite clear, the research indicates that there is a very strong relationship between those offenses and alcohol, hence the need for increased alcohol regulation. Just to summarize then, what we're saying is that there are two overarching recommendations that we're making, that for all public events, there should be alcohol safe zones with particular safer drinking criteria, which I'll list again, and alcohol free zones within in public spaces to make these events child, women, and non-drinker friendly, given the high rates of violence against women and children and the link between alcohol and this kind of violence. It's absolutely essential, because otherwise we're saying that women and children cannot attend these events. In terms of the safer drinking criteria in particular, we're recommending that if you have a public event, that alcohol not be sold in the morning at any public event, that it be sold from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 11 o'clock at night, that the size of the drinking containers actually mirror the legal limit of one drink, rather than the drinking containers being as large as they currently are, that wherever alcohol is being sold, that there is very good lighting, like we see in post offices, in parliament, in hospital, because the research indicates that when there is poor lighting, there is more likelihood of violence, and people feel anonymous, so they feel free to do whatever it is that they want to do. And if we want to increase a sense of safety and security, lighting is a very important component of that. Food needs to be sold wherever alcohol is sold, because the consumption of food slows down the absorption of alcohol. There needs also to always be the availability of non-alcohol beverages and water at affordable prices, because sometimes we find that beer is actually cheaper than water. There needs to be first aid kits and training for staff on first aid and also for dealing with intoxicated people. There should be no underage selling of alcohol, and also no people who are underage selling alcohol, the early warning system we discussed, and the communication and the information screens about the impact of alcohol and how many drinks are actually within the legal limit and what the impact of alcohol is on the human body in terms of health. In the alcohol-free zones, we're saying that all sporting centers should have family and children-friendly environments. They should have women-friendly environments. And again, this is the 55% of males and 30% of women drink alcohol. But all of our recreational spaces prioritize them over family and children, which is why we're saying every venue should have some alcohol-free zones. Thank you.
You said, what is the name?
Severa.
Severa.
Yes, thank you.
Are you sure 30% of women drink alcohol?
That's we did a literature review. We also did a legal literature review.
Press that one, because this one is closer to me. Press that one. That other one. Switch off this one and press that one.
Oh.
Good.
All right. Yeah, we had a literature review conducted, and which Agnes spoke to, and we also had a legal literature review conducted that looked at legislation of alcohol, and we're using the figures from there, which actually looked at the whole East African region, and it's a summary of the statistics from the East African region.
East African region.
Including us. We consider this is the WHO statistics, and we included in that.
I'm disputing our
30%.
The East African region. Correct. Ours is beyond, way beyond. I'm honest.
It's true.
Because we've commissioned a research.
Mm-hmm.
When the Free State, we said all taverns must go away from the township.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't get a tavern in the town, in town. You only get taverns in the township. And therefore we said, in every little corner you find a tavern.
Mm-hmm.
They scream and march, but we're very clear that if they want to make a tavern, and then they must put the tavern where they stay. Others are staying in suburbs, is operating a tavern in the township,
yeah.
And that tavern closes in the morning at 3 o'clock. Then we said nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're closing taverns now. And each and every corner of the house and in the middle, there's tavern. You say there will never be a tavern, two taverns in the vicinity of so many people that stay there. It's a battle. But let me tell you, people who marched against that were women. Because the women are saying they are feeding children on the taverns and all. The population in South Africa of drinking women is much higher than this one. But when you include it with the Asian countries, I would concede. But just do yourself, do South Africa. You must go to Upington. Everybody drinks there. You must go to anywhere. You'll find they have no any other life except drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we've drawn this kind of a research.
No, you are right. We are, because we're looking at the whole African region and we're taking the WHO statistics, there's a possibility that there's a greater number of women in South Africa that actually do drink. But I think that what you're saying about the taverns is also true. That is why Soul City has embarked on a 4.5-year campaign. It's almost 5 years, because we plan to address the issue step by step, because the economic argument has been made that that people stand to lose a lot of their income if we promote a reduction of alcohol. But we have already met with the South African Liquor Traders Association, and they actually do promote what you're saying, which is that there should be a maximum of one shebeen per a kilometer, not more than that. So we are working with all the different role players, because alcohol is an issue that affects so many different aspects of our lives.
No, thank you. Now, it was just an interesting percentage of statistics that you read. Even on issues of cigarette, South Africa is the lowest, but it's running so fast towards people who are smoking. After we put the legislation of people who are not smoking, young women are smoking. The reason is they want to be slim and then all that. I don't know where that meat coming from. But many women now are beginning to smoke in South Africa as per the research, which is surprising. And then originally, there were very, very little percentage of women were smoking in South Africa in particular, because it was this rural, old tradition. The women cannot just be running with a cigarette in the hand and all that. Now, with the opening of the Model C schools, these Model C schools children are teaching our children to smoke at any time, and then it's a nice thing, the norm. So you must check that one also. You're drifting very fast in your gender in smoking higher than us men.
But it's not just the Model C school. I think the media has a strong influence in the use of cigarettes and alcohol and all other drugs.
Okay, I agree. Members, there are the questions that the Soul City is raising, that they feel they need to be incorporated around this bill, to embrace this bill, so that at least their experience and their research must be able to be accommodated. Yes, Cora?
Thank you, Comrade Chair. You know, I find this research a bit biased. This research does not mention the issue of these men who have been beaten up by women, because that really happens. Men come from work, the wife is drunk, taken the money for the food for the children, have got the land. But I don't see this research picking up such things. Because I've got friends who have been beaten up seriously. I have to stop everything to go and intervene. And it's not one, but... And more especially this area which we've been causing, one of them came. I know all these things which is happening there. So, but I don't think... I don't hear the research speaking to those things. So we must really be... try to... She's back at them, but then Jalo Agnes. Because it's August, now we'll come up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must appreciate, first and foremost, the presentation that was done by Soul City. Surely they will make me also to want to watch their episodes on TV.
They have one.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying I need to become more frequent in watching them. also, Chairperson, maybe on the statistics, the research. Also, I'm with you in that one. I don't want to repeat it. you know, in 1997 or so, there is a plain dorp in the Karoo called Apartheid, where a research study was conducted, and apparently it was discovered that the entire town, almost 99% people, are drinking. Well, there's no work because of social problems. And it seems to me women were leading in that. So I'm saying it was a serious matter. It was raised very sharply in the media then. I'm not sure whether it has gone down, but also including the leaders there. So I'm saying this issue of drinking is quite a serious problem. you know, as I was looking in chapter 3 in your issue, I was just saying to myself, I'm thinking aloud, chapter 3. I wonder why can't we invite, though I know the time is not there, the people who are making this alcohol, SA Brewery, for instance.
I think they're right.
Just to come and make their own presentation.
Yeah.
Because this is almost the second or third presenter harping strongly on the alcohol and the manner in which it's being used. Yes, we did not call people of tobacco because at least the people's minds have changed and attitudes towards alcohol, except by a few. But I don't think we've really, because this is a serious challenge from school, university, up to adulthood. Drinking is the problem in South Africa, especially at a particular age of our kids. So I'm just thinking aloud whether shouldn't we consider that we also bring in these companies that are selling liquor so that we get their, what is their view in terms of the research that they've conducted.
Yeah, but the researcher is listening here, and then we'll inform Pori. We'll invite them because in this submission around safety at the stadium, many of reference are made out of, by even public, that the cause of the problem at the stadium. You remember another presentation was saying, these people are so drunk that even the stadium, when it is, can bend, it's difficult to help them because they can't even walk. So it's a question of liquor at the stadium. I think we'll have that. We'll do it. We'll do it in that. Just is the proposal acceptable, and then we'll ourselves and Cindy and researchers will go and make some proposal and send them in.
But surely, Chairperson, there are some recommendations that they've put forward, which are cutting across to other legislations that can be considered, surely, because I was just trying to check now, especially on the safety bill in relation to the police, where some legislations are coming back-to-back. I'm not sure whether it's a term called back-to-back in terms of the law, in terms of the legislation. So there are certain clauses that they've gone through, of which maybe at a particular time we will raise them, because I've noted some of the issues that they've raised and highlighted in their presentations. Otherwise, your introduction also was quite good in terms of making us a little bit aware what the thinking is by our local people in the various provinces, your research. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think that was the last part. Musa, sorry, I didn't see my brother.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Chair. I'm actually a bit curious. Let me just check with the ladies here that all, during the weekend I came across a group of young people at my constituency who are actually organizing a marathon on the stage here. They are quite very young. I'm sure their age ranges between 16 and 25. They're actually organizing a marathon on the 30th of December, and they are looking for sponsors. But as I check with them, the reason of them organizing a marathon on that day, they said they actually want to reduce the alcohol consumption during those days. And I thought of it to be something that is very wonderful. And I just want to check with you as to how they can access you so that you even help them further. But my question is that I'm also impressed by the fact that you are saying as people who believe in stadiums, stadia, some sort of a breathalyzer should be used on them, so that I think for that one it would be safety on roads as they drive back to their various places. But I would also appreciate if you had said even for those that would come into the stadium, because a lot of people would come to the stadium drunk, and the intention is to go and watch. But when you see a person who is drunk at 1 o'clock or 1 o'clock, and the game would start at 3 o'clock, obviously the intention is not to go and watch, it's to go and cause disturbances and disruptions. And in that fashion, one would tend to think that to say the safety of people who be watching games is like threatened. So if you can even extend it to say that those that would be getting into stadiums should also be checked as to whether their state of sobriety is all right. Thank you, Chairperson.
You can answer this.
I just want to say that of the all participants in this research, there were no differences among all interviews, men, women, ages 16 to 50, urban, rural, informal settlements. Of the 28 focus groups and 6 in-depth interviews that we did, there was just one low voice that said, I am not drinking, I will not drink because of the experiences around me. So all participants have admitted to over-drinking, both men and women, and communities perceive alcohol as a big problem.
I hope you're not talking about me.
So, and communities have actually shared some alternatives to drinking. Communities do have lots of ideas, but they are not acting on them. And communities, we just did not get into all the details of the research because of time. They also feel intimidated by the operations of shebeens and taverns, because who will start by going to the tavern owner and telling the disturbances he's causing to them? So I never said women are not drinking. And as for violence against women, perhaps men are not reporting it, but the study we conducted in 2003, which influenced the helpline we're having today, it was mostly women. It affected many women, but let's not get into that debate.
Honestly, you are protected. Go on.
So alcohol abuse is taken as the norm, and it sounds as if the communities are crying out loud for support. Another thing that also came was the action from government, and communities did say that they found police to be exacerbating, because they are also running some illegal shebeens. So that's how widespread alcohol abuse came out of the research in communities.
Good. Gideon, another thing that I just wanted to quickly. Alcohol says so. You see, you're saying when lights are on, there's no much of a sexy lights, and I'm gonna anarchy. But as soon as you dim the light, then anarchy begins there. Why should lights be dimmed? Have you made some research why lights should be dimmed, and then the dim lights causes anarchy? Can you tell?
Yeah, in terms of the lighting, these are the recommendations that have been made by the Medical Research Council, which has been studying the issue of alcohol for a very long time, and looking at the situations where there's overcrowding and where there is not enough lighting in existing bars, taverns, and shebeens. When you have that situation, then you have a higher levels of violence. So just following through from what we heard the SACC say earlier about the overcrowding at stadiums and other public events, when you are in a sporting event and it is going to be dark it's going to be easier for incidents of violence, not necessarily male-on-female violence, but even male-on-male violence, because if you have security there, it's difficult for them to see what is going on. Whereas if a place is well-lit, they are able to see what's going on and intervene.
Okay. Now, I thought that you say maybe in the tavern, whilst they are there, then the lights get dimmer, then there's anarchy there. So you must keep bright lights if that is the case. But
yes.
You have answered me. What is it?
That could also be the point, because if it's in the dark, how do you even see? You can easily sell alcohol to a person who's already intoxicated.
Okay. The other thing, you recommending of the banning of glasses to places that are selling liquor. But what, I have a friend who likes the J&B. He calls that Uchwaha no Bell. And this friend of mine will never drink anything out of a plastic or what. It seems he enjoys the glass. And then when he says the glasses must be banned, what do you put? Or the liquor from the glass and from another container which doesn't cause harm, is it the same? I want to be honest with you. I must confess. I've never drank in my life. I've never smoked in my life. I don't know the different taste of all those other things. Maybe your research can help you that Uchwaha no Bele in a plastic, it tastes original. In a glass. In a plastic, it loses the taste, and therefore, what is this?
Okay. We're recommending that either plastic containers be used, or there's a kind of glass that's called tempered glass, where if the glass is broken, it does not break into sharp shards that can be used to stab people. Now, I know that it's always very difficult for people to conceptualize such a major change to the way of life that we have today. But we like to use the example of the Tobacco Action Group, because if we went back 15 years ago, people smoked everywhere, and they would have probably been smoking in this room as well. But because we had legislation to protect non-smokers and to promote health so that people smoke in restricted areas only, that's exactly what we're calling for around alcohol. We're not saying that we shouldn't have alcohol anywhere at all in public places. We're just saying we must be more aware of the health and safety implications of alcohol use and protect both drinkers and non-drinkers, as well as children who are unable to protect themselves.
Thank you. To the advisors now. I have not gone to any stadium combat since, any of the rugby stadiums, where there is no braai before the stadium, braai, and a hell of a drinking. Not just ordinary drinking there. And those people would walk to the stadium. After the stadium, and then it's chaos. And then I don't know what you're going to say, because what they're saying is true. In football, you'll never have price of oral boards and drinking, and everybody goes to the stadium. In the province where I stay, if the Cheetahs play as early as 1 o'clock, everybody now, you see a pocket of friends, and then there's a smoke there, there's a braai, and a nice drinking going on there. And all those people are going to be allowed to get into the stadium as long as they are. Piet van Zyl was not sober that day, but Piet van Zyl was allowed to get into the stadium and causes all those problems. So what they're raising, they say, this causes a problem. But one difficulty to me, the co-chair of safety, I don't know how he's going to deal with this. They are saying when people are leaving the stadium, they have to be checked if it is going to be causing a hell of a stampede at the stadium, that kind of a thing. Unless they are tested elsewhere away from the flow of the traffic and all that, I don't know. You better know what should be. But the observation of those who are already have taken some few classes are those that cannot be allowed to get into the stadium. In football, you are not allowed when you are already drunk. In rugby, it's a natural thing. When you get to the stadium drunk, it's nice. And that lekker dop is gevat is a joke. But with football, it's not the case. So it's going to be a difficult task that Soul City is proposing, that after the game, just do some testing again of all people. Because it is easier for 90,000 spectators to go to the stadium. There is no huge stampede. But my dear sister from Soul City, when you open up that stadium after 80 minutes, when the Springbok game is over, 90,000 people, they will push you. You'll never even test one. Or there will be war there. So I don't know how I'm going to deal with that. Yeah, unless you're saying to the traffic officer, when they are now on the floor, everywhere at the peak points, and then the traffic officer says that, okay, you're coming from the rugby, the bokeh at heaven, let's hear whether your body has heaven also. Then you can change, you can test that. That's another thing. But the other thing is, the issue of the police. The police are also in the stadium. The only thing that we have to check there is whether the police are allowing those people deliberately, or the police take it as a culture for those people to walk into the stadium already drunk. But what I know the police are doing, they will not allow you with your, what is this thing that women are doing with the nails? There's something that you sort of fail in the nails and then to be shot and all those things. They will not allow you to go into that thing. They will not allow you to go with a scissor and all these other things. But when you're drunk, you can give them the phone and pass, and then it's normal. I don't know what they're going to do about it. But for the police visibility in the stadium, I have seen it. It's there. But how are they going to deal with this one, I really do not know. And that government should completely discourage the selling of liquor at the stadium. It's another proposal that you are putting forward. And then I want to hear from you what you say about this.
Well, thank you, Chairpersons, honorable members. We really welcome the inputs of Soul City in this regard. We feel that the majority of the input will in all likelihood be favorable, considered by us, but however, there are certain issues which we disagree. We feel that, I know that Soul City has an argument that these issues as portrayed by them should rather be captured in the Act instead of the regulations, to be, in other words, more visible to the persons who is actually reading the legislation for the first time around. Now, from a legislative point of view, drafting point of view, we feel to the contrary, because we say there are enough enabling provisions in the bill which clearly indicates that regulations will be drafted. And once you have an enabling provision, you don't have to dwell or delve any further deeper into that. Safe to say that you're going to prescribe the measures and then deal extensively with your regulation part, which we are actually currently already busy doing. I can cite a couple of examples here whereby you have said, for instance, alcohol safe-free zones must be created, alcohol-free safe zones as well. The size of drinking containers, then also no underage selling, early warning system, family free zones. Those type of provisions we have already catered for in our draft regulations, which we are busy, finalizing at the moment. So we feel that yes, what you're actually portraying and conveying to the meeting is quite in order. And we will definitely consider it. But I do not wish to, for the sake of, saving the time here, do not wish to bore the committee with the regulations. you committee chairperson, you will remember we said we're not going to discuss the regulation part here. We're going to, concentrate on the bill itself. So safe to say that, yes, we will definitely favorable consider. When we come to the regulation part, we will consult with you, like we have done, well, like we've undertaken to do with Mr. Peter Yuko on the anti-smoking campaign. We will also consult. From the police point of view, I think Bab can allude to certain issues.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. What Gideon just stated to the committee is absolutely correct. We conferred about that earlier. What I may just add here is that a lot of the proposals that were mentioned during the presentation are covered by the Liquor Control Act, either the National Act or one of the Provincial Acts on the one hand. And on the other hand, each stadium will have a liquor license, which is subject to certain conditions. Now, on top of that, you will note in the bill, the National Commissioner may take into consideration when making a risk assessment the fact that there was previous alcohol abuse at the stadium, etc., in Section 5, as the presenter pointed out. But then also the Event Safety and Security Planning Committee may also make certain conditions with regards to vendors, firstly, but also to the sale of alcohol. Now, the current practice at the moment is, of course, that no hard container that can be used as a missile, such as a bottle or glass, is allowed into the stadium in any event. So that would be mostly served in paper cups or plastic cups. And that type of condition is going to be standardized if the bill comes into operation through the regulations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Those were the responses from our legal team. I'm not sure whether you want to close the presentation. Just comment.
Just a quick response to the gentleman there about the youngsters. We will be putting together a seminar in partnerships with other partners to run the alcohol campaign, so they can just access Soul City website for details.
Thank you very much for the input and for the issues that you've raised. Just in summary, we'd like to say that given the role of sports in our society, and that it can be an alternative to alcohol and to substance abuse behavior, even to violent behavior, as Soul City, consider to be really important that the fact that alcohol itself undermines one's ability in sport and undermines one's health should be taken into account when the bill is being considered, because on the one hand we're promoting a sport as something that is good for health, and then we're also selling alcohol as something that undermines good health. So the bill needs to take that into account, not to ban alcohol necessarily, but to find ways to actually communicate the positive benefits of engaging in sport and watching sport as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we close, honourable members, when we started here this morning, many political parties and members many political parties and members raised the question of concern around the IWAF on the issue of Semenya. And therefore the Sports Portfolio Committee is issuing out a resolution that has to be sent to
the higher commissioner of the United Nations on the human rights. The resolution of the gender verification of Semenya by the IWAF. The Portfolio Committee on Sports and Recreation, as an integral part of the National Assembly of the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, hereby express a disgust at the manner in which the International Association of Athletics Federation had violated the privacy and gender rights of the South African athlete, Ms. Caster Semenya, during the Berlin World Championship, which commenced from the 8th August 2009. The committee had noted with serious concern the procedure of gender verification at the Berlin World Championship, which had deliberated or otherwise cast aspersions on the gender identity of our beloved Caster Semenya. In addition, the Portfolio Committee on Sports and Recreation would like to salute Caster Semenya, who had won the gold medal and made our country proud despite severe criticism by the IWAF without any basis for acting in a manner in which it did as a reputable international athlete body. Therefore, as a Portfolio Committee on Sports and Recreation, we call for an investigation on the above decision of the IWAF by the UN High Commissioner on the human rights on the following: whether the gender verification procedure by the IWAF on Caster Semenya violated any rights such as privacy, gender, but not limited to the foregoing. In addition, whether such gender verification is in line with international best practice and more progressive testing at an international athlete championship. The IWF should issue a press statement with an unreserved apology to our athletes, Caster Semenya, and her family. The Athletic South Africa, last but least, to the people of South Africa and African women in general. The UN High Commissioner on Human Rights should be heard and investigate the arbitrary action by the IWF, and the gender verification should be conducted without any violation of the privacy and the rights of the athletes, especially of the African region. The full investigation report of the IWF by the United Nations High Commission on Human Rights should be made public to the South Africans, German, and indeed all over the world, wherein the rights of an innocent, unsuspecting gender of African women had been breached since the beginning of Berlin World Athletic Championship under her glorious moment of winning a gold against such unbelievable adversities. So this is what we said we sent to the Human Rights Commission. But I just want to hear members' comment. Maybe they need other things to be put in place there. It's not subjected nicely for sports, but it's said we must issue as a sports and recreation committee. But we are all together as committees here. Is there anything in the on gender issues that probably we're not articulating well as men? Not that it's because you're a woman. Yes,
Commissioner. No, I think I was very thrilled when I saw that statement over the weekend, and also being proactive, representing Parliament as an extension through the committee. Except to say that I also made the note to you to say, can we have a clarity on the matter and how far have we traveled with this issue? And I think it has been raised to the highest level of this world, the UN. Once you include that, I think we are covered, except to say that maybe is apart from yourself as chairperson, maybe is there no way that you can visit the family and get some more facts, maybe technical and so on, so that we know also we've covered our back as a committee, so that when you speak much more stronger, because I would have loved to see this matter to be put as a motion also in Parliament, you know, so that it is being getting the necessary recognition it deserves through this committee, rather than by any other person. Maybe to mandate you to go to the chief whip and raise the issue to say you would want to have a motion without notice or a motion with notice, so that there's a brief discussion on the issue, so that in future these international bodies, including our own selves, we avoid such an embarrassment. But secondly, the resignation in the form of a protest by the chairperson of us, I think he has resigned, or he intended to tell his resignation.
The president.
I understand the motivation for his resignation. I thought that also we are having also an interest to get ASA to brief us as a committee fully to the circumstances that led to that, and what precautionary measures have been taken as a body representing South Africa in that world. So I'm saying I would love to see that situation, that we bring in ASA so that we get the integrity of this. Thank you.
Now, if you can check on your program, honourable members, there is a space for Athletics South Africa to make an input on this. But the events in Berlin and in the West caught up Athletics South Africa unexpected. And therefore, they had to prepare themselves both internationally and nationally to deal with this. Another thing that they wanted to do is to deal with the emotion of this child, an 18-year child. If it is your child, 18 years, and then under the whole world spectacle, and then there should be somebody who is dealing with that. And that's why the Office of the Minister immediately requested the parents, the mother and the father and somebody else from that family to fly to Berlin just to go and give a support to that child. And because Leonard Cheney is a member by virtue of representing Africa in the IWAF. So he has done his best. But I think physically and otherwise, that child needed the support of very close family. So I think we applaud the minister in quickly taking that matter. I would say with a full report around what has happened here, Athletics South Africa has requested us to come and present in the bill, and then I think we have not completely closed. We will be dueling provinces, but we'll check whether we will not have any other time where those other people who have been hampered by these unforeseen circumstances can come back and then be able to interact with us. But a full report is going to be given to the committee. The chief whip of the majority party is going to make the statement around this. And I think if the chief whip make a statement around this, making a statement at a higher political level, so other parties also are going to put the statement and really castigate this kind of thing. But the principal thing that all parties are saying, we are not saying don't do tests, but in the manner in which you have handled the saga, it's completely humiliating and embarrassing. And it makes us to condemn that action rather than what you are intending to do out of those tests. So the other comrades have gone to there because she's arriving tomorrow with a 7 o'clock Berlin flight or 9 o'clock, 7 or 9 o'clock in the morning and all that. But within the Foreign Portfolio Committee, formal, the statement that was made by the chair during the week, was a statement that was made together with the whip of the committee, because things were so hot that we could not leave that child, and even in ourselves, in putting a weight against in support of that child. But this a formal requisition to the High Commission to say, check, give us a full report, we'll share with this. Whatever the outcome of your report, we will be content with that kind of a report. So it just needed us to... Yes, complete.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm covered by what you've just said. I only wanted to indicate that, you know, if we speak of a woman on CASPA, it's like, you know, we are pushing something very, that is too much on her. I was trying to indicate that we are talking of a teenager here, and the fact that one family member was cloned to go and give her moral support, we thank whoever did that very much. But I was also saying that we as South Africans, we are equally perturbed and disgusted by the manner in which she was handled, and we equally would demand an apology. Apologies not only go to her and the family and the South Africans. All of them should get an apology. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think it's not for the first time that the Sports and Recreation acted in this very progressive way. When this guy was running with a blade, when they were saying he can't run, Oscar Pretorius, when Oscar Pretorius was banned by this international organization not to run because they're saying he's given more power by the blade, the minister flew advocates and people, scientists who are well equipped on the issues of those kind of matters. And finally, Oscar Pretorius' matter prevails because we can't let Oscar Pretorius, because other people are beaten by him, and therefore, all the years, these blades were not giving him an extra power. And suddenly, when he's beating the superpower, then it's beginning to say, no, it's giving him extra power. But the minister sent delegation there, sent even the advocate, and this matter was heard in the high committee of the Olympic Committee. And that case was dropped, and Oscar Pistorius was allowed to do that. But if we leave our athletes when they are international on their own day, and the government and sports and anybody do not do anything, Oscar Pistorius could have not run that race. And he won that race. At the speculations to arrive that, no, he's got more energy than anybody. Two amputee running on the blade. I don't know what power is that one that the people are talking about on that one. So those are kind of things that we are coming across in the world. But thanks for the minister. He was able to say that is not going to happen. We will quickly do something around that. But finally, honorable member, our public hearings are going to be suspended as from today, so that at least again we give members a little bit of a recovery time. We are going to meet on the 8th and the 9th. We'll skip Monday the 7th, so that at least I can see there's a Monday fever going on. So we'll skip the Monday the 7th. We'll be meeting on the 8th. On Tuesday, we will be going to Khayelitsha and the place that is going to be announced to you quickly here in the Western Cape on the 8th and the 9th. Immediately after the hearing here, the two committees are going to split. In fact, it's not the two committees. One committee, we are going to split it into two, so that at least we do job quickly and effectively. Then on the 10th and the 11th, there is a Group B. The names in the Group B will be announced. The Group B will go to Motheo District in the Free State, and it will go to Mokaka Municipality in the Free State. And Group A also will do Johannesburg Metro and do Ekurhuleni Municipality. And Group B is going to do on the 9th, on the 10th and 11th, Group B, 9 and 10. Yeah, he's right. The 9 and 10, the Group B is going to do?
Correct.
Right, 10 and 11. 10 and 11, the Group B will do the Durban Metro and another municipality. Now, it is easier, we have agreed with the chair that it is easier to start with another municipality because it's a little bit further there. Then you finish with the Durban Metro. And then after the Durban Metro, you get into a flight, you up to the Eastern Cape in East London, and then you do on the 15th, on the 14th, I think so, Umtata, East London, and then from there you fly to Port Elizabeth. And that will be the last point in PE. And then everything is finished. But here, comrades, we have leave the spaces for the weekend. But because comrades are going to be flown from Parliament to that destination with the cost for Parliament, that week, on a Friday, Saturday, if you feel to go home, you're going to use your own voucher. Because you are only providing for your voucher, for the voucher for Parliament to leave here and go to the destination. All over. And then you are going to be provided again with Parliament voucher from East London to Port Elizabeth. But if you want to go anywhere whilst you are in Port Elizabeth, it will be on your own voucher. From Port Elizabeth, you'll be flown to different places. Maybe if it is Friday, then you'll be flown to your home, but to come back to Parliament, it will be up to you to come back to Parliament. So that is how the arrangements are. In the Free State, because it's going to be over the weekend, all comrades are going to be in the Free State before we go to Joburg. But if there's any other person who wants to go elsewhere on that Friday, he will use his own travel arrangement. And then from there on a Monday, we will leave the Free State and go to Johannesburg. So I just wanted to clear those things so that there should be no huge burden to the secretaries, because they are likely to have few burdens to say, no, but we can't stay here, put us on a flight to go back. No. Flights are going to be arranged from here to Devon, from Devon to East London, from East London to Port Elizabeth, from Port Elizabeth back to wherever comrades are going to be. With the Free State group, flights are going to be provided from Parliament to go to Free State, and then in the Free State, we are going to travel, comrades. Unfortunately, Tinasuzi born in this, because when you are in Kruger, you are almost 200 kilometers to Joburg. Because if we are in Kruger to come back to Bloemfontein, it's another long distance. So when we are in Kruger, we're driving to, if we were going to be in Bloemfontein and fly to Joburg, we will fly. But when we are in Kruger, we are in the middle of nowhere. So it's Langene Pass in Matot. It is the driver's take Joburg. So that is hard luck. The group that is called Group B is going to be led by Ukombe Sindi, both a mixture of sports and police. And Group A is going to be led by me, both a mixture of police and sports, Free State and Gauteng, Port Elizabeth, Devon. Is there a question, comrade? Clear. So we will, the program, Mem from the DA, the program will be given to you by today, because we just wanted to endorse this program together here and say it's agreed, so that people must not say, no, it is changed and all that. It's a product that all of us have agreed upon. Lastly, Gideon, we will be meeting on the 8th and the 9th when we go to Kailicha for that public hearing. For now, we're giving members a little bit of a rest. others must read this bill, read it again, come in again, and then so that we're beginning to be more sharper on the bill. I can feel now members are beginning to understand what is going on in this bill. So by the time we conclude the bill, all of us will be experts on this bill. So, comrades, tomorrow there is nothing. It's a simple sitting of the House, and then the President is going to answer questions during the course of this week. So you must not say, I have allowed you to go home. No. And probably Cindy might be having a committee tomorrow. So members of that committee, safety, the police, you must know that the holiday are equal. But to us, sports and recreation, there is nothing tomorrow. It's a house. Thank you very much. The meeting. Oh. Tea is outside, and then I've seen nice cake there. Tea is outside, and then with a nice cake. Thank you very much, members. Thank you.